Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming out. Happy to see everyone got here. Okay. I got trapped in the stairwell on the way over here. I got on an elevator and I couldn't get out. So I wanted to get out, so I was like, oh, I'll just take the stairs down. But then I couldn't get out of the stairwell. It was like, I have a lot of dreams that are set in the stairs, in the stairwell. It's kind of like having a moment. And he sat down and thought, worst comes to worst, I'll just ride it out in the stairs. Everybody else will be snacking and having a great time. That wouldn't be the first time for old Brandies. Hold on a second, I'm gonna set my watch go off. So I'm gonna give a little spiel about Rolling Egg here and about the idea of like a shit zine. And then also I just wanna say we're gonna have cares to queue, we're going to have maybe a Q&A at the end of it. So I just want to lay some ground rules for the Q&A well in advance, which is a great way to do it is like, can you spiel more about this idea that you said? Or like a really quick question, you could sum up distinctly. What's not good is to have like a really long thing and then say, what do you think? It's kind of like not really good for anybody. But I'll remind you guys kind of. Okay, so first part, I got to talk about Rolling Egg, which is this zine I put out over the summer for 4 days. I did a one every day. So I kind of got started, as Ariel said, about with this newspaper called Mother's News, which I'm happy I don't have to introduce anymore. But that went for a good long time. It went for about 5 years, publishing it monthly. Initially, it was like a two-pager, and then it ballooned up to 8 or 12. And it was sort of like all closed systems. It ended in like a stressful situation, and I kind of just had to quit it. And then I took some time off and had like a moment of unfocused, or really more than a moment, unfocused energy. And then that kind of sort of set adrift. And I got a contact from my friend Darcy about this Fringe Festival that happens across the country, and there's an installment in Providence. It's a what would you call it, like a alternative theater presentation over 4 days. And she said, would you want to do a zine for every day of this? And I said, well, that sounds interesting, which is how you say no. And then she said, well, I'm applying for like a grant to do it. And I said, well, let's talk then. So I ended up doing it. It was really fun. It really solved a lot of the problems I had with the newspaper, which was that, in general, with like a creative project, there tends to be a blank page problem where you're looking at it and saying, well, I could really do anything I want here, but what am I going to do? That can be difficult. Michelangelo, the martyr, talked to him and he just removed the excess. That's a great situation, but not everyone has that direct touch to the main line that Michelangelo has. So that was stressful with the newspaper, coming up with what to say about January of the year 2019, but with Rolling Egg, it was a breeze because it's just, there's something happening and I just have to reflect on it. It's also great in that it was extremely limited in time. No one would suspect that I could make something good in a single day, which is a great challenge, but also a great leavening because people approach it not in the way of thinking, oh, this is something that I did, that, you know, I have a great requirement that this be worth my time. And rather that they're like, oh, this is, maybe there's a cool part in here while I queue up for this other thing. And that was splendid. I found as splendid as pearls. Having this sort of, this call to action, this thing that I'm doing. It was also very difficult though, because similar to the newspaper, I was writing about the group that I was broadcasting to. So I had to be very careful. Functionally, it looked like theater review, but no one really needs a bad review. That doesn't really help anyone, especially in this setting where almost everyone in the crowd was there to see their buddy, their loved one, their friend. They don't need to know that their performance was stunted. It doesn't really help anyone out. So a lot of situations, I ended up just talking about what the chairs were like. If I really hated to play, I would be like, oh, they have this beautiful way of raising the curtain. I'll just read a little excerpt, maybe that'll be Should I not do this one? I'll get another one. I'll do this. So this is just an arbitrary excerpt. Okay. I love these audience chairs. Plastic with good support in Klein blue, a strong, deeper than royal blue with some texture. Kandinsky says that the color blue is the spiritual color because your eye tricks you into thinking it's farther away. Due to a special human interest in redness, we have fresh fruit and emotional faces and other red things. I don't want to think of a chair as far away, but seated at a slight remove is good for the circumstance. The chairs are not foldable, but they seem stackable. I wonder if they ever just stack them as high as they go in that room with the huge ceilings. I absolutely would once. I absolutely would, and then absolutely would throw a basketball at the stack from far away. That's just a general rough idea of how the thing works. Anyway, yeah, fast and loose, time constraint, content limitation. Oh, there's also something beautiful about it is that I just printed it at home on my own laser jet printer. If you told me when I was 5 years old that I would have daily access to something that had both lasers and jets in it, I'd be positively delighted. And it turns out I'm 39 years old and I am positively delighted with this laser jet printer. It's a Brother HL2270DW. Some Brother fans in the crowd. Nice to hear. I just printed at home. And it's funny, like, I am extremely cheap, which is the second part of this conversation. But part of it, as someone who makes things, is I desire for the thing to be cheap. In this case, the thing had to be free. And, it's cutting into my overhead if I had to spend a lot. So this printer, I worked out the numbers on, and I was like, wow, I could really just buy this printer and then just huck it off of a ridge at the end of the whole thing if I wanted to. And I would still cost me less than like 5 cents a page or whatever. So pro tip, man, Brother, HL2270 duplex. Prints on both sides, it's pretty fast, it's great. So that leads me to, right, shit zines. Part of the organizing structure for this, even though it is like a newspaper, it looks pretty like legit, there's words and they're readable, is that I was very inspired by the legacy of the shit zine, which is a category of zine. Ariel, introduced broadly what this idea is of a zine, a self-published publication that is small in affect, not necessarily physically small, but like a personal, somebody hands it to you. You don't necessarily buy it at a store, but somebody just hands it to you. A difficulty with the zine world that I see now is that zines have become much more precious than they used to be, partly because it's easier to disseminate what would otherwise be zine information on the internet, through email perhaps, or Usenet. But it's also like things have gone in an art book direction. So things tend to be more precious, they tend to cost more money, which means I can't get them and I don't know what they are. But it makes it, all these things that I described earlier about this thing, that it's fast, that it's loose, that it's fun, and that it's a gift, it removes those things from it. So rather than somebody saying, hey, I like your shirt, here's my thing, check it out, you might dig it if you like dumb shit. That wasn't directed at anyone's shirt. just thinking like, that is at a remove, when the thing that you're giving them, you're asking them for $12 back on. Sorry, I have a note here. I was supposed to define zine, we already did that, but I think it's helpful at this point to also define noise, which is a key factor in this. Providence has a great scene for noise, and historically has for the past 20 years. But a lot of people don't really know what noise is or understand the concept of noise beyond just something that produces a sound like my a person coughing, for instance. So I would say that noise is a genre of music or any art which is absolved of the requirements of any other genre. So if you play drums and it doesn't sound like someone, a drummer, and it doesn't necessarily go on a beat and you hit the snare drum too much, that could be considered noise or whatever. So the shit zine operates in this context, in the context of noise, something that doesn't necessarily fall into a specific thing. You're not necessarily making a comic. You're not making a newspaper. You're just making some piece of thing. You're just tooting your horn and seeing who hears. The shit zine is the opposite of the art book. I'll show some examples, maybe that'll help out. So here's a breezy one pager from CF. This is from a while ago. A nice detail here is that, come on, guy, get in there. Oh, he put the date of how long it took him to draw, which was 2 days. Not bad. There's like some hand stamp stuff. It's confusing. There's no signature. There's no real title except maybe comics. And there's no requirement. Someone just, you don't buy this in a store, it'd be impossible to. Someone just hands it to you. Here's a beautiful twofer from the recent past. These are two issues of, this is really what it looks like though. So. It's two issues of Love Wins, which is a beautiful shit zine from Jason T. Miles. He's like a comics bro out of, he's a comics person out of Seattle. And he just started mailing me this out of nowhere. I was absolutely delighted. And we had some contact at a fest before or something, and he just got my address and started sending me these completely freedom garbage zines, just a bunch of lines. So, there we go. It's just, do you ever just make something and think, this isn't good, but I love it? Here's a good one. And someone walks in and they say, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm doing this. and then here's another one. This is good. This whole thing is just this one guy. Just grooving and moving. You would never buy this because someone could never sell it to you because you would never buy it. I wrote a fan letter into this one and he printed it. I'll just read it a little bit. Maybe this will help underline what I said. Yo, Jason, I just got the new Love Wins. Thank you for sending me this. It rules. Probably my favorite regular book right now. Not sure if this will make sense, but it's so nice to see a thing that is itself. I'm not sure if you're into noise music, but there's a great dude in Lowell, Mass, Ron Lassard, whose noise name is Emile Bolio, who runs a record label called RRR. He put out the first Merzbau record in America. I bring him up because in an interview once, someone asked him what noise music, and he said, it's the true sound of love. Love wins. It isn't dark or mysterious or weird or aggressive. Let a sound be a sound and let a line be a line. And let's just keep putting them out. And he persists. He keeps sending me these. People keep sending me fan art. Here's a cover by Ron Rigi, acclaimed artiste. Here's two issues of Monkey Vision Ledger Gazette by Mike T. He's a good guy. He seems like a good guy. Actually, he is a good guy, but he seems like a bad guy. This worked in concert with another one of his publications. Like I said, Providence has a strong noise contingent, and when I moved to town, it was not uncommon that people would just be handing you shit in the street. Oh, hey, how's it going? Here's my new zine, here's my tape, or whatever. And I felt like I was like really falling behind, which is why I started creating more stuff. But Mike sort of took it the other way, where he's like, dude, I can't be trading my zine with this shit anymore. Because like I'm silk screening the covers, I'm like really putting a lot into it. One of them comes with a CDR, whatever. Since hand stamped, so he made a shit version that this he could just freely dice out. But it's great. I think it's just like best of the sketchbook. Some nice things to look at. What does it say? No crazy bald heads. Here's some more. I can't even really. Come on.
Try one at a time. It gets confused or really? Something.
Naked Ladies Masturbating, this is by Maren Jensen. Here's two issues from Tom Bubble. He's really the king of the shit. He makes these kind of impenetrable books. This one's just text, but here's one he worked on with kids. It's just a fun feeling. Hey guys, what are you doing? Let's make a magazine. We're not allowed to do that. No, it can look like shit. Look at these other ones. It's inspiring. Here's one from Hartford. This guy's the king. He's been holding it down and doing his thing for so long. So wonderful and free. He's a great noiser. He has an act called Noise Nomads that Sonic Youth wrote a song about. It was the last single from their last record before they broke up. Just wonderful what's available. And I have some more. There's another one from Mickey we already talked about. Two from Christopher. And oh, here's another great one from Hartford called Typing Skills. Some other garbage. But it also, speaking of Tom Bubbles, that's another thing that's wonderful is that they're inspiring. Not because they're good, but because they're bad. They give you a freedom of movement, a place to go to. You can look at it and say, I'm sure we've all heard this in an art museum, at a Cy Twombly exhibit, for instance, and someone says, oh, my kid can do that, you know. That is accurate, but rarely does the parent say, like, let's go do that. Let's actually just get out the paints and let's fuck up our house. With a zine, I keep doing that. I'm not gonna, it doesn't matter. It's okay. No, it's no problem. That's like a Nintendo.
So weird.
Okay. See, something great about artwork when it wiggles when you're not looking at it. It's traditional. So I want to talk about shit zines, not just to show off my collection of garbage, but also to sort of say, like, you know, that was a historical method of partying and it's still available. It's still valid. It's still extremely fun to hand somebody something, even if you have nothing to get in return. There's a couple of good reasons why they went away, but those are circumstantial. One is Kickstarter. It became easier to get money to do something. If you had like enough followers, you could say, oh, I have this great dream of doing like a full color thing with like a hard cover and a foil stamp and a hologram. And if you have 10,000 friends and they all pitch in a dollar, you can make this $10,000 thing that's just too big. It's too serious. It's too heavy. You need money to get it back. When you really should just said, well, I can't really do that, but I have access to a photocopier of my dad's office or whatever. Another issue was the dialogue around crowdsourcing in a weird way kind of snipped the shit zine because no one wanted to do things for free anymore, which I understand. If there's like an organization that has a predatory aspect on art and is like hooking you into these contests or whatever where you design their logo and then you get a t-shirt out of it, that sucks. But it's still good to maintain, as a spiritual practice, giving things away for free, I think. Another reason is book fairs versus zine fairs. Comics sort of took over as the dominant factor in self-publishing, and that led to more like art book fairs rather than zine fairs, and that tended to be more expensive. And another thing is just young people getting into drawing and comics got hooked on using color all the time because they're just drawing on a computer. And then color is more expensive to print. And then you need to see something back. If it's going to cost you 80 cents a page to make your zine, you're not going to be giving away for free unless you're an idiot. or unless you figured out how to steal it, which is also a very important skill for artists, is figuring out how to steal things and getting access to materials. So that leads me to the next question is, what are the requirements of making a shit zine? You need, first and foremost, and maybe only, access to the printing materials. For me, I got this beloved brother, but also, like, how did I got started by, how did I get started? Oh, just stealing copies. It used to be there was like 100 ways to steal copies from Kinko's, and quite frankly, there still is. There's always gonna be, every lock can be picked, and there's always gonna be a great way to steal copies from Kinko's. There's going to be a great way to steal copies from your job. I had a zine that came out a while ago that I just printed at a college that I didn't even go to. I just said someone else's name and they let me in. It was dynamite. I guess maybe getting caught in the stairwell tonight was payback. But yeah, cleverness and theft. And that also keeps the mind sharp, which I think is important for many artists, though not all. And the other thing, I wrote this down as a requirement that you should have a fun vibe or be carefree, but that's too heavy. You don't really need that. You just need access. And the social benefits are incredible. So there's three level of benefits, I guess. There's social, economic, and spiritual. Social benefits are it's fun, it's engaging. You get to trade and make friends. Me and Ariel traded our shit zines when we met. That was very nice, and now here I am. Not like that was the goal or anything. Same thing with Mickey. Mickey added me on Friendster, and then we met up and traded our shit zines. It's economic. There's a great economic benefit to making a shitty, fast zine, which is, say you're doing a fest. Say you're like Mike T and you have like a real thing. And you're there and you're like, oh, how much is that? And you're like, oh, it's $10. And you're like, oh, cool. But that person might have like $1. And it's like, do you want to get that dollar or not? So if you have something that's $1, then you can get that dollar. It's great. And I find personally, as someone who tables these things, a lot of people go around thinking, all right, this is something I enjoy. I have $40, I'm gonna just sprinkle it around. But that's actually impossible to do unless everybody has something for $1, which is achievable. So let's try it. And then the spiritual benefits of doing a shit zine are enormous. Just acquiring a feeling of movement, of regularity, and of peristalsis instead of catharsis. Not everyone ascribes to that view. Some people like to just hold in shit and then just blast it out in one furious go. That is not my way. Okay, great on time. So I guess I kind of blasted through that. I guess I kind of just leisurely shit that out. Does anyone have any questions? And then I'll have the stuff out. There's other stuff out. There's plenty of snacks that should get eaten because they're just going to throw them away. But does anyone have any questions pertaining to this or any other topic? Preferably this topic. Yes, in the back of the green hat.
Do you have more feelings that you want to talk about how the shift has gone from being paper to digital and the super accessible, cheap way to get stuff
out
of the
internet? Yeah. Sure, wow, great way to post that. Yeah. So the question was, what are my feelings regarding paper no longer being the easiest way to shit something out, internet being the easy way? I think that's absolutely true. There's something, though, about the limitations of paper that are extremely valuable. In a way where, like, do you have a Tumblr, for instance? Sure. That's nothing to be embarrassed about. So I have, like, a Tumblr. But the thing about a Tumblr is you put something on there, and you try to access this breezy feeling, but then maybe you just drew some stupid thing, and then you have like a million hits, and then people are like, why does this get a million hits? This sucks. And you're like, you have to read that. It's kind of a bad vibe. The beauty of paper is like, you can just do it. You can just send it out there, and you're like, whatever, I need 30 copies. If someone wants to go through the trouble of scanning it in just to make fun of me, they could kiss my ass. So having that limitation, having that bounding area, I think is very helpful from a creative perspective. It's certainly easy if you have like, if you're like, I have something to say and I want to get that out to the most greatest number of readers, that's completely valid. And you can do, however, you can use any tool in your tool bag to achieve that. But for zines, I think it's so useful to put something down. And also with a zine, you have feeling of closure. A picture, you put it up and it's always still up there. And you can't really, it's just its own thing. With a zine, it's like, I did this and now we're moving on. We're just turning the page. I did it, I published it, I made it in a day, and now we're on to the next thing. I think, does that
happen? Thank you.
Some good, okay, cool. Does anyone else have a question, thoughtful or otherwise? Okay, yes, please. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure anyone in any set has had that experience of, like, someone's like, man, I make these whatevers, and some now this Time magazine is going to have a zine or whatever. It sucks. But there's nothing you can do. Well, I don't know. It's, I guess it ultimately doesn't matter. It's like if Reebok wants to say, check out our new zine, that doesn't affect me. I have no bottom line to begin with, so how can it affect my bottom line? It doesn't like damage my brand for someone to make a zine and say make a magazine and call it a zine. And if, you know, you see this in skate zines, certainly. Skate zines can have this enormous production that looks just like a glossy romance novel or something. Just these crazy objects. And you're like, how is this? But they just have, you know, shoe companies sending them money, so can't hardly blame them. I do the same thing, I guess. But it doesn't affect me, you know. It's like, doesn't dilute the brand. What are some zines that, like, you know what? There is a funny thing that happened last year, 6 months ago, maybe Mickey remembers this, where someone, there was like a tweet going around of like, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to make a zine. And it was insane. And it was like, everyone's talking about how hard it is to make a zine, but all you need is $5,000 so you can secure the rights to this thing. And then have the glossy cover, and to make the keychains, and to do all this other stuff. And they were listing all this stuff. Keychains is one of the things they needed. And you'd read it, and it was like, I only read it, this is a real Twitter phenomenon, but I only read it as the replies. People saying, like, this keychain thing is out of hand. But really, shut up. They were just using that word in a different way. They were talking from the perspective of the anime community or something like that. Where zine, do you remember this?
It was like a fanzine, like Kickstarter, like they would make a, what is it called? Like collaborative book anthology.
Yeah.
Like
fanzine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like if you wanted to make Secret Prison or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was like, dude, that's not. And everyone had their own response of like, that's not fucking how you do it. But then the response was like, that's not even what I'm talking about. So I guess in a long story short, that's not even what I'm talking about. It's like if someone wants to call their, you know, whatever, Yellow Pages a zine, it's not going to sweat up. But I do find fault sometimes with, at these fests, you have these moments like Small Press Expo is like small press. But then you see people setting up these like massive tables. It's like, dude, you put out a book that's in Time Magazine. You can't be here. I understand that you're like, you're laying down money for the table space and your name is on the flyer, but like, dude, you gotta get out of here. You're medium size, if not big press, you know. Personal pet peeve I segued into. Does anyone else have a cue or prompt? Yes, please.
Well, I was interested in if you could talk more about like time, like what, like when you're talking about scenes, I don't know, just you were talking about like the time constraints and the boundaries and how that's an asset. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if everyone in the room has had this experience, but if you ever have that thing and you could just fuck with it forever. You could just like, it could be as simple as like a outfit or something as chaotic as a dictionary. But you, that's a bad example, so that's chaotic. But like, at a certain point, you need to just have someone take it away from you and just say like, okay, we're moving on. You don't have an eternity to compile this thing. We just need to flush it out. Which is why like these early CF zines I love so much. And part of it is saying like, you know, this happened February 17th and 18th of 2003. Beyond that is not my goal. It's going to be imperfect. It's like a pressure release sort of feeling. It's like if you did a drawing with your other hand and someone was like, it's bad. And you're like, I did it with my other hand, though. It's pretty good for just the other hand. They'd be like, oh, true, true, true. So in that setting, it's like, you know, I certainly believe you should try to reach the stars. But it's also helpful to have these sort of bounded situations where it's like, I don't know. There's a general idea you hear in like arts classes of like, you need to make 10,000 drawings before you can really like get that Michelangelo moment. I keep talking about Michelangelo. I'll talk about another ninja drill. Before you get that Donatello moment of like whatever. And this is just like, you just have to keep turning the page. So to have that time dimension of like, you could work 1,000 hours on a single drawing, but it's still just one drawing, you know? It's like, time to move on. You could, Jason Chi could have had 10 books out by then. Yes, please.
It's a nerdy librarian question.
Yeah.
How do you organize your personal
fucking questions? Great question. Yeah, this has been an incredible struggle. That doesn't do dignity to other people's struggles, I'm sorry. But so here's like three zines that I love and adore. Worst Comics number 2, Monkey Vision Ledger Gazette, and this one from Polina. The problem here is that they're all extremely different sizes. And how do you afford that uniform dignity to everything, but also how do you find everything? So I have these like, I'm sorry, we're nerding out. I have these poly bags that are have three-hole punch on the side, and they're open on the top, and they're magazine size. Everything gets bagged and boarded and put in a binder. And then I write the name on the binder in tape, so that if I need to move to a bigger binder, I can just take the tape off. So I have like a Mickey binder, but I also have a Rav binder for Mickey's sub, you know, that's like, because that's the most of the Mickey section. I have 2 CF binders, one from the Straight Edge days and one from current era. I have a Zarlag binder. I have, Dirt Palace and Associated binder, because some people that came through there only made like 1 or 2, but then like obviously Mickey lived there, and she's got her own 2, so there's a breakaway. I've yet to make an additional piece of paper that goes behind the zine on the other side of the board that has information about like when it came out, what the crew was like. But that's where I'm at. And it's also nice because it causes me to cull things. The bags and boards aren't expensive, but neither are they free. And if I come to a moment of hesitation of like, am I really gonna bag and board this? Then it's like, I have this realization of like, I don't care about this to the tune of 10 cents. If it's about saving 10 cents, yeah, then I should just get rid of this and whatever, I should just mulch it. But at the same, I mean, gotta save some of the shit, you know? Okay, we're doing good. Any other, yeah, go ahead, number 2.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was wondering if you associate any other musical styles with certain types of zines, like how the shit zines you associate with white music?
Ah, yeah, certainly.
Like punk with zines in general.
Right,
but
yeah, punk has a connection, obviously, just through DIY and because of a beloved coarseness. But these other things that certainly have their scene. We showed John P. earlier as King Cat comic. Even though he's more of a Husker Du fan, I associate him with, kind of like a singer-songwriter music. It has like a personal approach. It's beautiful to look at. It's mellow and small. Him, I don't think of like as a noise guy. He doesn't crush the gig. But yeah, he's strumming along. What are other ones? Techno, that's more of like a magazine culture.
Think of Riot Girl zines.
Oh yeah, Riot Girl, sure, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of like punk in general, but also like, there's not really a lot of like punk zines anymore. Most of that just goes into like actually having a band. Yeah. So it's sort of been like it didn't used to be that everyone felt they could have a band. Some days you'd be like, no, I really make the flyers. I'm not so good. And now everyone just has a shitty band, which is kind of cool.
Do you find anything and incorporate them into your collection, or maybe this is for the library collection as well, that you might categorize as a scene even though it wasn't intentionally made?
Absolutely. Yeah, great question. Yeah. I mean, I have like a religious.
Right.
Religion.
That's
what I thought of. Those works should be studied with a careful eye. I think anyone that has an interest in publication, or any field really, should be looking at everything in that field and adjacent to that field with like religious stuff, that's incredible. It's like they literally just leave stacks of the books at the laundromat. That's inspiring. You don't really see a lot of people being like, oh, here's my record review, a pile of them, you know, whatever. Yeah, religious stuff, some packaging, I think of as like, this counts as a as like a publication. Oh, when I was doing the week, the Mother's News, I picked up a lot of like free publications just to sort of see what they do, what their ads like. And but those aren't, I didn't, some of them were zines or like psychedelic drawing newspapers, but some of them were just like these horrible like new age bullshit, you know, organic rug ad sort of things. I'm always picking up tons of stuff. It's a problem. But yeah, certainly. Anything adjacent to the field, I at least look at. What? Who's got a new guy? Okay, yeah, new guy, go ahead. Oh yeah, so the question was, pertaining to the relationship between zines and detritus, trash. Yeah, I mean, it goes in two ways. Honestly, I've seen the both of them. One is that something blows against your leg in the street and you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. And you put it on the machine and copy it. That's a classic move. We talked about Merzbau earlier, who's a seminal noise performer. And his name is Trash. Merz is Trash. Came from Kurt Schwitters, who was an artist in the 20s or 30s, who had a deep relationship with trash and making things out of trash. Trash is a key element of noise, because it's something that isn't nature that's blowing around in nature. And that's things blowing around. I don't know, it's easier to talk in a noise context. But the other side of it is, yeah, tons of these things are produced, and if you don't like them, you just throw them away. Which happens. I mean, I remember walking down the streets of Providence and I made this newspaper, Mother's News, and, you know, I printed up 5,000 copies of them and put them at our, you know, laundromats, for instance. But yeah, the first time I was walking around and I saw one just blowing like a tumbleweed down the street in front of me, I thought, like, I made it. I truly exist in the world. This is no longer just like my arts project, but this is a problem for someone. something inspiring about that. That's nice, yeah. Yeah, always a careful eye on the trash. It's also like, I lived for a while on a river, on the Woonasquatucket River, and it was very inspiring, the things that would just blow down the river. Sometimes they were animal, or fish rather, and sometimes it was just trash. One time it was just a ton of this foam. It's a weird foam that was like firefighter's foam. I don't know how to describe it. In that way, if you don't have access to the river, there's always a street full of trash, or like a weird lot. And you walk by this weird lot every day and you're like, oh, the purple flowers are up. And then one day you're like, how did that rowboat get there or whatever? That can be inspiring, bring something to your life in that river way. Trash remains extremely influential. Sorry, that was too much of a boondoggle. Let's go to you.
Okay.
Back to you.
What? Sub question.
God.
Is Mother's News a zine or is it a newspaper? Or is there some like spectrum?
Yeah, great question. I would always say newspaper because I have a difficulty with I would call it a newspaper because part of the paper was about selling ads.
So that brings me to my actual question.
Yeah.
Which is about setting ads up and your relationship to advertising.
Yeah.
And like not whether that changed your relationship to advertising, because I assume it did. Mm. But if you could just talk about that process of
like, yeah. So the newspaper had ads in it. And I was thinking about like defining zine on the way over here, and I was like, oh yeah, you can't have ads. And I was like, well, I did ads. And like, there's other zines I could think of, the skateboard zines we were talking about earlier. I'm sorry, say, what's my relationship to ads?
I'm sorry, it wasn't a fully formed was just, you mentioned ads a minute ago, and that newspaper had such incredible advertising in it.
Thank you.
For anybody who didn't see it, it was sort of a combination of ads created by the people who purchased the ads and ads created for them by you and your team.
Yeah. I just didn't want wasted space.
Yeah.
I just didn't want something that your eye would just gloss over. I wanted the whole thing to have impact. And I wanted to look cool. So that's a big problem of mine, which ends up with me doing everything myself. Because I wanted to look cool.
But it was like you had this incredible editorial control over the ads.
Mm. Yeah, there were some clunkers. But I tried, put something out in the world. You want it to look cool all the way, through and through. And that was also inspired by Paper Rodeo, which was a free newspaper out of Providence in the early 2000s, where it was all like psychedelic drawings. And one of the most unbelievable things about it, and this was like so cryptic, people didn't sign their drawings, they were hard to read. Chippendale's comics, they go in a snake pattern. So even if you sat there and read it, you would be reading it wrong if you didn't read the one little part that tells you how to read it. And some of them would just be like, yeah, just actual trash. Or you look at it and say, is this on purpose? Or is the printer mad at them? But there would be ads at the beginning and end of everything where it's like, all right, I know that someone paid for this. How are they possibly happy with this? Because the name is written backwards and upside down. But that served in this way of like, it was an indicator that it was real. It was an indicator that it was like, if this was just some thing you got, you might look at it and be like, oh, some fucking rich kid paid to have this made, and then whatever, maybe their cousin works at the plant and they're there at night, or I don't know what. But you'd be like, oh, this is somebody's art project. But looking at it and seeing the ads, that made it pop into like, wow, someone is bringing this around to a pizza place saying, have I got a deal for you? That's incredible. So I sort of like, money is a magical weapon that you can use, that is used against almost everyone on earth, but you can use it to your advantage in small amounts. In this case, it was like having one monetizable thing where it's like, somebody paid for this. Some business realized this was a good idea. That made it like real. That made it potential to be trash rather than just some art project. Michaela.
Will you talk about why you put Find the Batman in the news?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so this is, I don't know if everyone is familiar with this newspaper that I used to do. Come on, we talked about it earlier, but part of it, no, it's okay. In the advertising, there was a very tiny picture of Batman. And if you found the Batman and sent me a postcard, then I would send you back a prize. And initially it was like a little pin, and then it came to be this little embroidered patch of a cute Batman face drawn by the kid. So, but the reason I put it in there was, there's two good reasons. One was to activate the ad section, so that you had to pore over every single inch of it. Because I worked hard on it, and I want someone to see it. I want someone to look at everything this close. And the second was, what was the second? Oh, the second was because I wanted to get mail. I wanted to rent a P.O. box in order to, because it's fun to have a P.O. box. The O2909 post office is the greatest post office on the planet. And I foresaw that I would check the mail every single day, and there would never be any mail, and I would be upset. So I thought if I had this thing where you had to send me mail, then it would force people to send me mail, which worked like a cinch. It was great. It was wonderful. Although a lot of people were like, oh, I found it, can I get it? And I'm like, no, you have to send me Kylie. Kylie told me this every single time I saw it. I found the Batman, can I do it? And one time I even gave her a pre-stamped, pre-addressed postcard to me. She couldn't get it in the mailbox. And I had no sympathy. But I wish I chose someone other than Batman, because Batman sucks. He's a rich guy that beats you up. He should be spending his money in ways to support criminals from the other side. You should be putting it into mental health programs, doing something other than just fucking punching drug dealers in the face. Grow up, Bruce Wayne. Does anyone else have any questions? They don't have to be about Batman, but I have a feeling they're going to be now.
It's just an observation about getting mail. It's like that's another advantage of a shit scene, is like the higher the production value, the less likely you're probably going to get mail, right?
Yeah. Right. Oh, but also, like, there's a funny thing with a low, I don't want to say low production value, but there's a funny thing about this quality of thing, something that is itself, is that people say, these kids say the darndest thing, and what they say is, you're not going to believe this, but I actually like it. And that can be very insulting to the creator, but that really calls out. Some things can be so perfect that you look at them and say, well, this was created in space, and they don't need me. But some things, like I wrote to Love Wins, because I was like, dude, I'm picking you up. I'm picking up your signal, and I'm sending it back. So, yeah, the call for mail is real. Get a P.O. box. It's awesome. Okay, so do we have any more questions, or are we just going to attack the charcuterie? Okay, yeah, one more, please.
Just one more question.
Cool.
Why is the Omniville
Posadas the greatest Posadas? Great question. It's because of Kathy. Kathy from OT909. She's such a sweet person. And this is also, I'll tie this back in to a larger conversation about zines and about subcultural production, which is that if you're like the one, let's say you're the one punk in your town, you're the one person with a mohawk, and you get bottles thrown at you and everything, in 15 years there's cool bands in your town, even though you're the only one punk, because a kid saw you and they said, wow, look at that person. They look like a stegosaurus. They do whatever they want. I'm going to look into that. And then they, I don't know, get a tape with Green Day, and then that leads them to find actual good bands, and then whatever. So in the same way, Kathy from O2909 transformed that place from a den of iniquity into a pleasure palace, but a very nice place, because she was so nice and so warm and effusive with her love, that it was just such a joy to be there, and you caught the vibe from her. And everyone else working would be like, well, I could just continue to be mean, or I could be fun and lovely like Kathy. So Kathy spread it to Joanne and Denise, and then when Kathy finally ended up being transferred to
Rumford,
she ended up getting transferred to Rumford, Joanne and Denise kept the vibe up. And then new people would move in, and they'd be like, try to be gruff for a while, but then they're like, oh, the vibe is nice. Okay, so, oh, hey, you know, and then, like, it's like Cheers in there. But only the good parts of Cheers. And now it's been long enough that's sort of like, that is kind of fading. But it is inspirational in that way of thinking of, like, dude, I could just be doing something and be shouting out into nothing forever, but there's somebody picking it up, and you have no idea who it is, but I don't know, it can be the littlest thing can really have these reverberations. It's quite nice. I strongly recommend a career in the arts that lasts a long time without paying attention to whether anyone cares. And now, the second to
reach. Thank you. Thank you so much. And yes, snacks. And then, you know, before you totally.